Greetings and welcome. Welcome back. This is part two of our three-part series on Exam Jumpstart 7534 Prerequisites for Architecting Microsoft Azure Solutions. My name is Dan Stoltz. I'm joined by Brian Lewis. Brian, thanks for joining us today. In part two, this part, we get to dive deep into the Azure portal. So one quick reminder that if people are seeing this video and they haven't joined the newsletter yet, the only way to get an invite so far is to get lucky and find it online, or you can go to itproguru.com/join, join the newsletter, and you'll get an invite emailed to you for this event. So with that, I'd love to have you take a quick second to introduce yourself again and then show us what you got in Azure.
Sounds good. Welcome back, everybody. For those of you who are coming back, I'm sure you just went like I did to sign up for Dan's newsletter. What we're going to move on to is the showing the Azure portal. And before I do that, my name is Brian Lewis. I'm an IT pro evangelist with Microsoft. You can see on the slide here. You can reach me on my blog at mythoughtsonit.com, where I share my thoughts on IT or it. But what we're going to do now is switch over to the portal. I'll log into my Azure, and we'll take a look and see how Azure looks to do some IaaS services and look at the other services as well. Okay, to start with, I'm just at a browser window. You may notice the Bing search engine in the background. If you're not familiar, Bing is a fantastic search engine if you're looking for a search engine. But what I'm going to do is go to www.azure.com. And from azure.com, I probably need three W's, not four, right? That is something to be aware of. It's not on the test, but when I go to azure.com, I can certainly sign up for my free trial and look at the other things. If I hit portal, that will take me to the portal. And so this is logging me into the current production portal. And I'll overview this real quickly before we head back. When I log in here, I see all the different data center regions that this account has access to, and they have green checkboxes, which means they're good. If they had yellow checkboxes, that means there's some problem there, and if they had a red checkbox, that would mean there's a big problem there. And then I can click on there and to get more details about any of the problems that might be at those sites. The thing that that's useful for is if I'm having a problem, I can go here and see, is it my problem with my server, or is it a problem with Azure in general? And certainly that's helpful. But let's switch over to the other portal. And I can hit that by hitting the classic portal here, or I have it up as well already. So this is the classic portal. A little different view, maybe not as beautiful, but it shows all of my services and items listed here.
Hey, and Brian, look at all those. Is that all templates on the left-hand side? Kind of?
All these over here?
Oh, well, yeah, it's all your different services, right? That's kind of like what my example earlier from the Visio templates.
These are all different services. Now, these aren't templates. These are different things that we offer. So, for example, the first one down called web apps. These are websites. And so if I want to create a website, I can do that here. You can actually create up to 10 free websites that run forever for free. And they're just websites that you can use. If you want to go into those, you can change them to something more advanced. And then they will charge you. So this is one section where I can do that. We'll come back and look at the virtual machines in a little bit, but this is where I can create VMs to do anything within a server. If I move on down, there's mobile services, there's cloud services. I'm not going to explain what all these are right now, but we see that there's tons of things. Storage is an important one here. These are spaces in our storage where we carve out a spot for your data, and you make a storage space, and then your data goes inside that storage space. You mentioned the Hadoop Insight, HD Insight before. Mm-hmm. If I was to go create a Hadoop cluster, I could spin up a nice 8-node cluster in 5 minutes. Try doing that on-premises, right? Yeah. That'll take you weeks.
Try buying the hardware to do that on-premises.
Right, exactly. Yeah, those servers are really well connected, too. We have them connected with InfiniBand network cards, so that's 56 gigabit. Between each one of those servers. So there's some pretty interesting things in these different services. As well as backup. If you're looking to do backup, that would be in recovery services. And we have multiple offerings under recovery services. CDN, content data network. So if I want to have data that goes out from my website, for example, have all the graphics spread out all around the world. And so when you hit my web page, you hit my web server for the text file, but all the graphics could come from a local store. That would be a CDN. And certainly we have a CDN in Azure we can use. There's automation, machine learning, stream analytics, on down. The other thing that is interesting here is the networks. So what I'm going to go into right now is we want to have basically go into a server. That server needs to have storage and it needs to have a network. And that's what we're going to go create. You can see the other services here of traffic manager, remote app, Active Directory. I will summarize a little bit about these, I guess. Traffic manager is a service that you can put up, and it's a name service. And when you hit that name service, it's able to span out the replies of the DNS to different servers. They don't even have to be within Azure. They can be in your own data center. They can be on our competitors' data centers. And so I hit this name. It can say, you know, if you're located in the US, go to the US-based server. If you're located in Europe, go to a Europe-based server and give you that from the list. So Traffic Manager is a really great tool for that. Remote App is publishing applications. So it's like setting up a terminal server or RDP server, a remote desktop server, and doing a published app. But you don't have to manage the terminal server. You just manage the application. And so that's Remote App. Very, very cool feature. Active Directory, this is Azure Active Directory, which is a little different than your on-premises Active Directory. A lot of people, I ask them if they use Azure Active Directory, and they say no. And I ask them if they use Office 365, and I point out to them, you actually are using Azure Active Directory, you just didn't know it. It's a unique animal, and your Windows 10 machines can actually Active Directory join it to Azure Active Directory, even though it doesn't use Kerberos certificates, it uses OAuth 2 certificates, and does a completely different thing behind the scenes as far as authentication and security. Other settings here. So let's go on up. Oh, I shouldn't pass up the marketplace. There's other services that third parties provide. You may be interested in providing a service here, or other partners have them here. So for example, if I want to send emails and have an SMTP engine, I can purchase that from a partner who has that listed in the store here. So it's a lot of things that can expand Azure's usage from the store. So what I want to overview first is virtual machines, because this is the most basic thing in Azure, in the sense of we're all used to using machines and servers. So why not show you what you're doing here? As a matter of fact, the reason we added infrastructure as a service to Azure, because the future is definitely platform as a service, or PaaS, and having those services run, because it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to scale out. It's a lot less work for you. But we have to build apps, or you have to build apps. Somebody's got to build apps that use that first. We have all this old legacy stuff that use servers right now. And so the easiest thing to do is build a server and move your workloads onto that server. So let's look at how to build a server. I click the virtual machines and I hit plus. That brings up the interface to say, all right, do I want to do quick create or gallery? I always do it from gallery because it's a more useful interface.
If we use these templates, do we still have to like create our storage in advance and create our network in advance, or can we do that kind of on the fly? How do you normally do that? And do you have
any
guidance
on it? So it depends what you're looking to accomplish. If I want to put this server on a network inside Azure that they can communicate to each other without going over the internet, then I want to create a network first. If I want to create just a single server that's not going to be tying to anyone else, I can create just the server right away, and it will automatically have a network created. But if I want to do more advanced things, have it part of Active Directory, that kind of stuff, I certainly want to create a network first. From a storage, it's the exact same thing with storage. It's nice to create a storage environment first, but I don't have to.
Okay, great. What I'll add to that is really the way that I look at it is, if I just want to stand up a machine quick and I want to give that machine internet access and allow it to do things for me on the internet, fine. I don't bother creating all that stuff in advance. I just, you know, let the defaults go. But as soon as I think, hey, I'm going to have this server in the future communicate with other servers that are also in Azure or other servers that are in my on-prem, then I need to go set up my network first so that I can have everybody talking. You could do it after the fact, but it's a lot more work to change that stuff after the fact. So it's a lot easier to plan a little bit ahead on how you're going to actually deploy these services.
Yes, you definitely do. And when we look at the test examples as well, the test is going to think about, what do I have to do first to create this? It's not going to be, well, I could do it and then go back and change things, right? The answer is going to be, do it correctly the first way. So create the network, create the storage space, create the VM within that area you just provisioned.
Absolutely. Thanks.
When I create the server, I have a choice here of images. Right here is my Server 2012 image. I can scroll down. I actually have Windows Server 2016 Preview 4 I can create. I've got one pre-filled in with SharePoint. Now, one of the interesting things about these pre-built images here, SQL Server, for example, when I provision these, all the licenses are provided from Azure for using that. So I don't have to bring my own license. When I spin up a server, I'll spin up a Server 2012 R2 data center version. That includes the server license as well as all of the CALs needed to connect up to that server. So I don't have to do anything else from that aspect. I can also bring my own server images and put them up in here. But things that we also have right from Microsoft, whether it's SQL and Microsoft products, there's also products from, oh, look at that, Oracle server. So you spin up Oracle, this will be a VM from, you know, with Oracle all pre-installed into it on a Windows Server 2012 box. I can scroll down further and we'll see I've got things such as Microsoft Dynamics or
All these are supported images because they're in the gallery from Microsoft.
Right. Yep. Now here I have some desktops, Windows 10 desktops. This is because it's an MSDN account. It's a developer account. In the developer accounts, we can do the desktops. In our production accounts for enterprises, desktops are not allowed to run inside a hosted environment at this time. But in the developer environments, they are allowed. I can bring up a nano server. I haven't seen that yet. Or what I was trying to get down to is the different versions of Linux that are pre-built here from Microsoft. OpenSUSE, Ubuntu server, these images are already put into the portal. There's also things like the Barracuda firewall. There's also things such as an appliance for caching. So where is that? Riverbed, Steelhead appliances are here. Puppet Enterprise servers. So there's all kinds of images, as well as you can put your own images up there. Anything you can create and run on Hyper-V, you can run inside Azure.
And a lot of companies I've also noticed that they'll have images available like from their website or from GitHub or something where you click it and it automatically deployed into Azure. So in addition to the gallery where there's tons of them, there are also some scattered all over the web.
So I'm going to build my favorite server, which is Server 2012 R2, which until 2016 ships out will be my favorite server to build. So when I go into the next tab there, from this wizard, we have version release dates. And if I click that list, I have a couple different dates. What these dates are is the patch release. So these images that are out there are already patched, right? So I don't have to build it from the ground up and apply all the patches. These ones have the patches all the way back, from December 14th. So I won't have to apply any patches except things that have come out since then. I give it a virtual machine name. So I'm going to call this one BJL temp. I can choose standard or basic tiers. This basically is a difference in price point, as well as do I have a layer 7 switch in front of it, some of that. I can choose sizes. Whoa, look at that list. There's a lot of sizes. I can go anywhere from an A0 in this account on up to a G5. G5 with 32 cores and 448 gig of memory. The A0 is going to be a shared core and 768 mega memory. The very attractive thing about this is that one's about $14 a month. I'm going to choose actually the D1, which is running on an Intel Xeon CPU, 3.5 gig of RAM. The A series may or may not be on Intel. It may be on an AMD motherboard. So I'm going to choose the D1. I have to give it a username. The username can't be administrator. One of the things we found was there's tools to hack into servers, and they try the word administrator a lot. So this will actually change the administrator account to whatever name you set on this. And the password has to be pretty difficult and unique. You can't use the word password or 123456, which I know are the most common ones, but that's why you can't use them. We don't want to have our servers broken into that quickly. So we'll hit next here. And then I've got my virtual machine configuration. Now, I can create it as a new cloud service, or I can have it join an existing cloud service. This is stuff we'll learn about more and is definitely on the test of how cloud services work. And I can have up to 50 VMs inside the same cloud service. I also choose where I want it to locate. So we have the data center regions across the world, right? And here I can go in with this account to the East US, East US 2, Central US. Different accounts may have access to different regions. I know in some of the free trial accounts, this will be a limited list beyond what I have here. What I usually choose when I create things first, like Dan stated, is I want to create my own network first. So you create a network in a region or a location. So I'm going to choose my network here. And now I will be on the same network as any other servers I put on that network. And it's auto selecting my region of where that is. Another thing is to notice is that I put in the BJL temp and it appends .cloudapp.net. So in the service model, this is changing when we go to the resource model, but in the service model, you always have a domain name tied to it, .cloudapp.net. So that means there can't be any other BJL temp machines created. If I put something in here that someone else has already used, it will come up red and tell me I have to choose something else because it has to be a unique name. Anything else to add in this section, Dan?
Yeah, on the name, one thing that I want to make sure that everybody understands. You did absolutely say it, but to be crystal clear, the cloud service DNS name is not unique for your subscription or your account or your company. It's unique for all of Azure because that's what's used to create that public DNS name.
Right. And so as more and more people use Azure, that becomes a limiter. So certainly as we go forward, removing that barrier would be nice. Finding a unique name, you know, will be more and more difficult as more and more machines would get added to this.
Right.
The other part here is the endpoints. We see there's two endpoints created. And this is done when you first create your machine, right? I have a remote desktop endpoint created. So this is port 3389. Mapping to an auto-created port, which is probably going to be a high port number, not port 3389, to throw off things like TS Grinder, which looks for port 3389 to then try to crack into the administrator account. And so that is set up by default. And another thing is I have a remote PowerShell port open by default to basically go administer the server once I create it. I can add something else here. I could remove those here. But by default, those are there, and that's how we'll manage the server going forward.
Yeah, so those public ports, the auto, what auto means is it's not going to be, the public side of that port is not going to be 3389. The public side of that is going to be some automatically generated number, 56,000, whatever. And then internally, it's going to map to 3389. So it's not, you can't just guess that, you know, that what that remote desktop service is on.
Yep, and so one of the other things to make note here, I guess we'll talk about this more later. This is going to have an IP address that's external that can be accessed on the internet, and it's going to have an internal IP address. So the one assigned to the host itself is not directly connected to the internet. It actually goes to a switch first, and then to the, that's on the internet. So there's, we call them a VIP and a DIP. The DIP or dynamic IP address is assigned to the server. It's the one that gets the private port, and the VIP is the virtual IP address that gets the public port.
Yeah, and I noticed that you're doing, you didn't do anything for the storage account or the availability set. So just real quickly, the storage you're creating automatically and the availability set is if you want to do high availability. We'll definitely talk more about that in the class, but we're not using it for this simple example.
Correct. Well, I can choose one of my stores here. So the storage account here, I have some pre-created storage containers. And so instead of creating another one, I will just use one that I currently have created. All right, and then this last page has a couple different things we can install. One is the VM agent. This VM agent is a nice tool because it's inside the server, and then it allows me to do things from Azure, from the console. For example, resetting the password. Let's say I forget the admin password. Or someone changes it, and I want it changed back to the one that we initially set, I can go in and have that happen from the server or from the console of Azure. I can reset that server. So as long as I have control of my Azure account, I can take control of my servers, even if I've lost control of those servers or forgotten my password.
I've actually had that happen to me before. I was creating a machine on a webcast, and you know, I went in there. They knew my username, and then they went in and did, you know, some, you know, playing with me or whatever. But I literally lost control of my server 5 minutes after I created it. And you know, thankfully, I was, you know, somebody was a prankster or whatever. Now I had two options at that point. I could either go in and, you know, reset the password, which I ultimately did, or I'd have to basically wipe that machine and start over. Which obviously, if it's a production machine, you don't want to do. So this is a really important thing to have available to you in your arsenal as your toolbox, to be able to fix something if something goes haywire.
Yep, this is definitely a worthwhile tool, and it's an Azure agent. It's the Azure VM agent that gets installed.
Yeah, so it's a pretty small footprint too.
The other things I can put in here are different agents for, you know, antivirus or for management tools, and so I can have these other agents pre-installed from this section as well. So I hit complete, and now it starts to build my server. We see up here the top one, VGL Temp, is now starting to provision. It's going to take about 5 minutes for this server to fully provision. But in 5 minutes, I'll have another server. Now, I do have a server already connected. So if I choose this server, I can highlight it by clicking on the line, and it will highlight. And then I can choose things like connect at the bottom, restart, shutdown, attach, attaching a disk, or detaching a disk. I can capture an image of it if I want to make a copy of it. Or I can delete it if I want to get rid of it. The shutdown will actually not just turn off the server inside, it'll deprovision it from Azure. And this is important because we want it to be, if we want to shut down the machine, we want it deprovisioned from Azure so it stops billing us. I can certainly leave it provisioned and go into the server and tell it to shut down, and it'll turn the server off, but it'll still be sitting there provisioned, still have the memory dedicated to it, still have the network card dedicated and the IP address on the internet dedicated to it. And so it will still charge me because it'll still have the CPU cores dedicated to it and be sitting there waiting for you to turn it on. So shutdown, by shutting it down from the portal here, deprovisions it, but keeps the configuration so that I can just turn it on and then it reprovisions it. But when I do that reprovision, that'll take about 5 minutes to reprovision it, or 4 minutes or so, to find a place to put it in there and start it, much the same time as this creation. If I were just to turn it off and turn it on, it would immediately start up. If I click the little arrow, I actually go into the configuration of that server. And I can see on the dashboard things about the server, such as it's up and running. Here's the CPU usage and disk access usage on it. I can see things such as the DNS name. This name of this server is ssdbox.cloudapp.net. Its virtual IP address, or the IP address on the internet, is 104.45.233.247. And my internal address is 10.2.0.4. So get a lot of information from this main dashboard tab. These are tabs at the top. And one of the things that took me forever when I first started playing with my VM here was to find this tab called Endpoints. Clicking on Endpoints, this is where I would set up, if I put a web server on this, for example, I would add a HTTP port here. Or let's say I want to do a protected HTTPS. I would add an endpoint by clicking the plus. I would say what protocol I want to use, TCP or UDP. I'm actually going to pick the HTTPS. Let's see here. There it is. It auto fills it in. It's port 443 on the public side, and it's going to map it to port 443 for me on the private side. I could change that if I wanted to. And then I'm going to hit create. That's going to create another endpoint for me on that machine. And in about 30 seconds, that will be added to the switch, and then I'll be able to get traffic to my server.
So this is, in a sense, managing
ever to find that.
So in a sense, this is managing the firewall on the network that the computer is attached to?
That's correct. This is managing the firewall, or the layer 7 switch, that is on the internet that maps back to my server.
Okay, but on the server itself, if I want to enable that port, I still have to do it in the server firewall, right?
That's correct. If I install IIS and have that, it should be added by the install wizard, but if it's not, I do have to open up that hole on the firewall of the server itself. When I first started playing with this, I was in my machine. I turned off the server firewall, which you don't want to do, but I did, because I couldn't ping the thing. I could not hit. I put on the web server. I could not get to it. And then I mapped port 80, and what do you know, things work.
Bingo.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely you will want to make sure you do that on a standard install. There are other ways to set up VMs in Azure, but this is the standard, and this is what most likely will be on your test questions. Other things on configure, I can set up things such as changing the size of my server or changing it from basic to standard, that kind of thing on setting up differences in the server itself. So one of the things you might say is, well, how do I get access to my server? And I'll go back, and let's leave this page. I've selected that, the SSD box, and what I do is I hit connect. What this does is this downloads an RDP file. That RDP file, all I have to do then is open it, and it will start up the RDP client on Windows, or even on Mac, and connect up to the server. So if I hit open, it's going to tell me, you know, do you want to connect up to it? It's from an unknown publisher. I'll say connect. Now here, it's wanting to use my Microsoft account, right? That's not going to work. And if I just put in the username Brian and I'm connected up to a domain, that might not work either. So you do have to use something that many of us already know, which is the ./. But this is something that if you don't know, can be hard to find. The ./, when you log into a machine, says log in with this local SAM account of that machine. And so we're going to remote in and log in with the local SAM account of the server we built.
One thing that I've noticed, Brian, is most of the time it does work, even if you don't put the ./ in there. But for whatever reason, I have had people not be able to get in without using that. So good tip. And one of the things that I always have to tell, you know, customers, because they're like, because it defaults their domain credentials. Like, well, yeah, that's my domain credentials. Let me just put in the password for it. But it doesn't know your domain. So you've got to do that other user. And it's a small step, but it's one that everybody has to take.
Yeah, what I found is on my domain joined machines from work, I'll have to put that ./ on any standalone workstation that I'm connecting to or from or a Macintosh. It gets right in. So here is my desktop, and this is the server 2012 R2 box. I can see on the desktop we have it listing out my public IP address and my internal private IP address. We can go and add services, remove services. It's just it's a regular server 2012 R2 box. But to say it's regular, it's a little bit better than the servers I have at my residence in my lab. And to show that, one of the things I've done is I've installed Chrome, not to show, for one, to show that we're browser friendly, but for two, this has Flash built into it. I didn't have to install the desktop experience. And I want to just basically go to a speed test site. So if I hit speedtest.net, I can go see how well this is connected to the internet. And certainly a lot of us do this, you know, when we're testing the internet connectivity at home or at the Starbucks. So I'm testing this on my server now. This isn't my home network. This is my Azure server. And we see that we're at 520, 530 megabits per second. The only reason it's getting up this fast is that none of you are using speedtest.net right now, evidently. a lot of times I max out their service, and I'll only get, you know, 200, 300, or whatever. But if I switch to a different service, I can get more, or I'll switch to a different service and get less, because usually the services can't handle the speed that my server can handle, which is one of my favorite things about Azure, is just how awesome of a server I get to play with.
Yeah, so whenever I think about
it, 549 megabits per second.
Yeah, just downloading big files, that definitely is just eye-poppingly fast. You know, one of the things that I've also done too, thinking about performance, and you know, the network performance is pretty incredible. And it's not necessarily test related, I don't think. But an interesting side note is if you run like Iometer, you get some pretty amazing performance out of the disks on Azure as well, particularly if you're using some of the premium storage. So I was just as happy about the disk I/O as I was about the network capabilities on Azure.
Yeah, this machine I'm playing with here is one that I have SSD drives on, and it does have a very fast throughput for disk. And the other thing here that I want for the test that you to know is that upload and download speed on an Azure VM is the same. You know, we do throttle at Microsoft, but in this server, we're you know, definitely not throttling beyond 500 megabits per second. So the only reason I'm only getting 300 megabits upload speeds is because speedtest.net can't handle it beyond that. It's not because my VM can put out what it can download at. It's the same speed. So not like our cable modems at home or any of that. It's
for sure.
Speed in both directions is the same.
Great.
So that's the VM here. Let's go back to the portal, and I'll just mention a few other things about these portals. Both the old portal and the new portal are HTML5 based. They work across Chrome, Firefox, Edge, IE. They work on all of them. They don't need plugins or any of that kind of stuff.
So and that is on the test. It was on my test.
I believe I saw it on my test as well. Okay, and the one last thing I wanted to mention on this portal, both the old portal and the new portal here, both of these portals are HTML5 based. And so the important part is there's no add-ins in that, you know, that are needed to use them. Here I'm using the Microsoft Edge browser to work within the portals, but you can use Chrome, you can use Firefox, you can use Safari, any HTML5 based browser will work. As far as not having plugins, that's a fantastic thing. You know, it's as far as the it will work on Linux, it'll work on Mac or any other OS as well that has an HTML5 based browser. And so that's all you need to work within Azure. Any other tips or tricks from the test that you can think of, Dan?
Not on the browser, just HTML5 was the big one to me. I mean, there's lots of other things that we'll get into when we get into the exam. But I think for the precursor, the prerequisites, I think you nailed it. I think, you know, we just got to understand a little bit about the new portal now, or the, you know, what on the exam is the preview portal, but now currently is the current portal. And I think we're good.
Okay. Well, I do want to also mention that when you're using the portals, if you've ever seen some weirdness, we do rev Azure about every 3 weeks. And if you're starting to see something, you were, you know, using the portal previously, and now you're seeing some goofiness, a shipped refresh of your web browser will make sure it gets all the latest stuff, because sometimes you'll get old pieces of the portal that are cached in your browser. So I have seen that, but that's not on the test, but that may be useful to you if you're starting to see weirdness ever in the browser. I haven't seen that for months, but I have seen it in the past 5 years once in a while. So it's something to think about. All right. And so from the new portal, did you say you wanted to overview something here, Dan?
No, I think we're just ready to roll into, maybe we could do some of that same stuff in the new portal to see the difference as part of our next video series, and let it rip.
That sounds great. In our next video series, we will take a in-depth look and do the exact same steps in this portal that we did in the first portal.